Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, I want to remind you of something. I wrote a book called Trickle Up Poverty back last year. It's out in paperback, but I'm referring to it for a specific reason other than to sell books. The end of the book has a Savage Manifesto on borders, language, culture, and economics. And I put out a 37-point plan. Now, you can dismiss it if you wish, but dismiss it at your own cognizance, because 200,000 people or 250,000 people bought this book in hardcover, which means that at least double, triple that read the book. In paperback, it'll probably approach a much larger audience. And so, therefore, there's a lot of people who agree with Michael Savage. And here's a preface to what I'm going to say to you before I read you my manifesto of what I think needs to be done by any candidate. Any candidate who wins should enact some or all of the following programs. And I want to preface it with this particular paragraph, which is very controversial, but unfortunately was prescient in that it's become more apparent to me that it's true than when I wrote it. Page 303. Every time this president can't have his way through the legitimate, prescribed constitutional process of passing laws, he bypasses it. He is not an emperor who can do whatever the heck he wants. In spite of his delusions of grandeur, Barack Obama's Marxist-Leninist view of America, his hard left march towards socialism, his spread the wealth around nonsense, and his disregard for our Constitution must be stopped. How can we keep America from becoming financially, morally, and ethically bankrupt? How do we retain our place as a shining light to the world? Conservative patriots must return America to the core principles that made this country great, using both the contract from America coupled with the sensible, doable solutions found in the Savage Manifesto. And here they are. One, English only. Now, I won't read anything underneath the first few words unless I need to. One, English only. How's that? Does that work for you? Make English the official language of the United States. Require all who immigrate to our country to begin immediately to learn English as part of the requirement to qualify for the privilege of American citizenship. Likewise, require voting ballots to be written in English only. Now, you say, well, why would you start with language before economics? Because the glue that holds a nation together is its language. Unless there's a common language, there's no commonality between the people. And I, as the son of an immigrant, will tell you this. Every one of my ancestors learned English. They didn't throw away their past. They didn't throw away their traditions. They didn't throw away their religion. They didn't throw away their ethnicity. But they became Americans. Today, ask yourself. Ask yourself why you have to press one for English in your own country. Ask yourself why so many politicians have raced to make this a bilingual, trilingual nation. In San Francisco, a ballot is printed in more than 10 languages. Why? To make sure that as many illegal aliens as possible will vote for the socialists in the city of San Francisco. Two, close the borders. Three, defend the borders. Pull the troops out of Germany and put them where they're really required. Pull them out of South Korea, where they're doing nothing, and put them on our southern border, where there's a real threat to our citizens. Four, defund and repeal Obamacare. Remember how the Schechter brothers overturned FDR's socialism? Sue on the grounds of religious freedom. Use Schechter brothers' strategy from Chapter 5. Reduce the size and scope of government. The federal government is bloated. With the exception of the military and defense, reduce all departments in size by 4% each year, for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. Now, this is a little different than Mr. Perry saying he would eliminate three departments entirely. I would say reduce the size of every department and then go from there. Require government employees to speak English and to have achieved at least a high school diploma. I don't have to tell you how many of them don't speak English at all and have no high school diplomas. 6, liquidate TARP. 7, oil for illegals. 8, strike down the Anchor Babies Law. 9, export jailed illegal aliens. I didn't say export all illegal aliens, did I? Hear me clearly. Export jailed illegal aliens. Our federal, state, and local jails are overcrowded with 2.3 million inmates as of 2008. Of that number, 29% are illegal aliens. They don't even belong here, yet we're paying an average of $29,000 per year to house, feed, clothe, and entertain them. Send them back to their country of origin. Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Shall I repeat it for you? Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Every policeman and detective in America knows that that works. It's the only thing that works. The way it works is because it works because it identifies who's liable to perform the crime. Idiot. 12, name the enemy. 13, rewrite the rules of engagement for our troops. 14, save the SEALs. Stop prosecuting our Navy SEALs and other military personnel for doing what needs to be done to subdue our radical Islamist enemies. You can't fight a war in ballet slippers. We must stop requiring that our soldiers do a plié before they ask the enemy if he'd consent to being handcuffed and taken away. How's that for plain common sense? Does that work for you? That's 14 points. There are many, many others. 18, impose tariffs on China. We must draw a line in the sand with regard to China in order to loosen their stranglehold on our economy by imposing a 20% tariff on all goods produced in China. The tariff should be raised by 5% each year that China refuses to revalue its currency. That's pretty clear. You don't have to go to a Wharton School of Economics to understand that that would work. 19, offer health savings plans. 20, institute a flat tax. Simple. How's that? All Americans above the poverty line should pay the same percentage of income tax, a straight 15% across the board for individual earners. This would simplify the complex tax code and the unfair practice of tax discrimination, since 47% of U.S. households pay no federal income tax. Did you hear that? 47% of U.S. households pay no federal income tax. I'm reading from Trickle Up Poverty, The Savage Manifesto. I've got a few more minutes to keep this going. 21. Keep the estate taxes at zero. George Bush was right to eliminate the so-called death tax, the confiscatory practice of taxing the inheritance money passed from parents to children upon the parents' death. In 2011, this tax will jump from 0 to 55% on estates with assets valued between $1 and $10 million unless the Bush tax cuts are renewed. You'll say, well, what do I care about the rich? Well, it's not your money to take from them. That's why. That's why. In other words, you don't understand something. Money that is passed on to children has already been taxed at least once, if not several times. Why should the government now come in and take more of that money? It's unheard of. 22, say no to VAT tax. 23, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants. Why is New York City, for example, paying a $240,000 tax-free disability pension per year for a former fire chief? Why do almost 2,000 House of Representatives staffers take down six-figure incomes? How can 43 of them soak the public for $172,500, which is three times the median U.S. household income in this down economy? Okay, this is number 23 of Savage's Manifesto. So if you think it's all fun and games here, I suggest you look into some of the plans I have. 24, defend the Defense of Marriage Act. 25, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. What's that mean? Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a tax credit for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. You want to support marriage? Put your money in the pockets of those who remain married. You want to support families? Support families with lower taxes on families. How's that? 26, make abortions illegal. 27, end affirmative action. 28, limit welfare benefits. 29, voting reform. Require a government-issued photo ID, such as a driver's license, at the ballot box when voting. While this doesn't provide proof of citizenship, it eliminates the acorn-style fraud of registering dead people. 30, fire Obama czars. 31, 32, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. This is probably one of the most important ways we could control the gangsters on Wall Street. Not all members of Wall Street are gangsters, but there are certainly members of Wall Street who are worse than the five families of organized crime in terms of the amount of money they've stolen. What is the Glass-Steagall Act? Why did Bill Clinton eliminate it? What would it do for you? I can't summarize it all in 1 minute or less. It's on page 307 of Trickle Up Poverty. Here's another one for Wall Street. Reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule eliminated by George Bush. Super important. 35, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship. 36, introduce institute tort reform. What is that? Tort reform must be instituted for medical malpractice to curb frivolous lawsuits by the briefcase mafia and stop out-of-control awards for damages. Medical liability should be capped at $250,000 per claim. This has worked in California, where it was introduced in 1978. If passed, tort reform legislation will reduce the legal industry's inordinate influence in raising medical costs. Well, there are others in my manifesto. I think I've given you an awful lot in 10 minutes. It can all be found in Trickle Up Poverty. Whether you have a copy or not, you can buy one in soft cover right now. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
The Office of the Presidency.
Oh, five. Okay. So commerce, education, and
President's EPA. Office.
EPA. There you go.
Yeah.
Let's talk deposition.
Seriously? Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. We were talking about the agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's no doubt about
but
that.
But you can't name the third one?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce.
Office of the Presidency.
I can't.
And the third Office of the Vice Presidency. There's three offices right there. And then, of course, you could do away with the Treasury and perhaps even the Defense Department. Welcome to the Savage Nation. So as you see, my most dire pessimistic predictions are coming true right in front of your eyes. The Republicans are committing hara-kiri in front of the world. You see even the imperfect lying Gallup poll. Even the imperfect lying Gallup poll shows that two months ago, as a matter of fact, Obama was way behind a generic Republican candidate. Now they're almost even. So it just shows you that the debates they're running are destroying the Republican candidates one by one. Now, that's in addition to the mud being slung by the evil operatives of Obama, like Axelrod smearing Cain with false charges. Something Axelrod is very well known for is bringing up false sexual charges against people. Well known for that. This is who's running your country right now. One of the most dangerous people in the history of the elections. In the history of elections, I don't think there's anybody as dirty as David Axelrod. Articles about what he's done to previous candidates are shocking to see what this man does. But nevertheless, 43-42, Obama versus a Republican generic. While a month ago, it was unbelievable. 2-3 months ago, it was 47-39. So by doing nothing but playing night basketball, he's moving up in the polls. And while making themselves into idiots, they're falling down in the polls. The Republicans are taking a dive. And I would say the smart money would say that Obama wins again for two reasons. One, the whole illegal community will vote for Obama, and there's no controls over the illegal aliens. No voter ID laws allowed in Axelrod's America. After all, you want as many illegal aliens from Mexico to vote as possible, don't you? Secondly, the Tea Party will not come out in huge numbers for Romney. Why? They're not excited by him because of his liberal social policies and his Romney care. So therefore, it looks to me like the fix is in. It's all over, clearly going in that direction again. The smart money would say it's Obama term two, and thanks to that, we might have a mini Chavez in our hands. Frightening to think what he might do. It's frightening to think of what this man might do if he's given a second term. Because right now, he's playing a centrist game. He's becoming, he's hiding, in other words, what he was doing the first 2 years, right? Do you want me to talk about the Paterno incident? You want me to talk about Sandusky? Do you want me to talk about this amazing, crazy, insane story? We can do that. How about tuberculosis breaking out at Occupy Atlanta? It was only a matter of time until contagion spread in these fetid little tent cities.
Savage.
Everybody breathe in. Take a deep breath in. Hold your breath. Okay, breathe out. Breathe in with Mike. Breathe in with Captain Mike. Everyone breathe out in your cars. Out. We're having a giant savage meditation. We're going to levitate the Occupy movements. All together now, we're going to levitate the vermin out of the parks. Everyone now breathe in. Envision the vermin going home to their mommies with the sniffles. Now breathe out. The Lord of the Flies are all going to go home to New Jersey, Brooklyn, and Queens with the sniffles. Are they going to sue the city for cutting off their electric power? Oh, sure. Oh, yes. What a country. Only in America. Only in America. Talk radio is not only not dead, but talk radio is very much alive. Although the midstream media has been claiming for years now that talk radio is dead, that the empty skirts who have been saying that this is a medium only for fringe extremists or old men, that talk radio is only for old men, I've proven them all wrong. Talk Radio Network and Michael Savage are partners. We've been in business together since when, 2000? Now, we all hear that the Internet is the king, and a lot of people ran to the Internet with their advertising money. Yet everyone knows that no one's been able to monetize their investment in the Internet. Nobody. You see, talk radio is a medium that you can't hide yourself easily in. You can't hide behind a mustache and such. 3 hours a day, Jerry. 3 hours a day, Jerry. Mr. Mustache on Fox. And unless you have a massive production staff who is talking for you, you're not going to get very far, right? But I don't have a massive staff. I have a very small and very good staff. And when you do talk radio right, people get to know you. People get to understand that you're a real person and they relate to you. What I'm saying is I've proven that talk radio is a very vibrant medium today. People who listen to talk radio are more acutely aware of what's going on than the average American.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I think that it'll come down to who can debate best in the fall of 2012. I think that in that setting, explaining basic philosophy, offering people a clear choice between food stamps and paychecks, a clear choice between class warfare and American exceptionalism, I think that I have a greater likelihood of defeating Obama than any other Republican.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. I don't know how anybody could be a cop in this country, frankly, with what they put up with the vermin on the left, with the ACLU. And then when they get a guy like this, what a cop would like, they can't. How could they control themselves? If a cop is tough enough for the job, he has to have a lot of violence in his soul. Let me start with that. You've got to be irrationally violent. No, it's like a laser beam or whatever you want to make the comparison to. But if you're a weakling, don't become a cop. Don't go into the police work. We need you as the somebody wrote an interesting thing about the law enforcement personnel, who they really are, or even, you know, the warrior class of soldiers, not the deadbeats who sit in the Pentagon and just write contracts and look for their jobs. The actual frontline combat troop, the policeman, the real policeman as opposed to the gold bricker, they are, in essence, as I'm trying to use the exact right word. Let's just say just as physically capable as the worst criminal. Let's put it in that genre. So in other words, they're potentially homicidal, just like the criminal, if they're a really good cop. The difference is they are our Irish wolfhounds. The police, the soldiers, they are our Irish wolfhounds protecting we the sheep from the wolves. Do you understand that? Without cops, without frontline soldiers, we'd all be devoured. It's interesting I'm bringing this up now because what I'm reading is what went on in the world prior to this century. The violence committed against people, I guess it's still going on in places like Libya and Africa. Look what we just did there. We killed about 40,000 Libyans with our war against the Gaddafi, and that wasn't considered a war crime because it was a good war crime. See, only Republicans can commit war crimes, but let's not get sidetracked. I'm reading a very interesting book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the British Empire. It's a fabulous book, and every word is written so clearly. Anyway, he describes battles between the British and against Afghanis, or the British and the Pakistanis at that time. And in many cases, the Muslims gave the British, after the British lost, let's say, a battle, they told them they would have safe passage. So 16,000 British, it was 4,000 troops and 12,000 civilians, mainly children and women, tried to cross the Khyber Pass because they were assured safe passage, when in fact their enemies were waiting for them, and they killed everybody after raping all of the women, putting them into harems. They killed everybody except one man survived. And you look at them, what the British did after that to get even. Very soon thereafter that, they leveled an entire city. And they subdued these heathens at that time with the violence that they were able to inflict upon these people who did that to those 16,000 people that had been deceived. The point I'm making is, there are many points I'm making. One is that without a strong military, we'd all be chewed up like sheep. Without strong police, we'd be eaten alive in the streets of this country because the number of violent predators is at a higher level than it's ever been because of the high use of drugs. Okay, you just don't know what really goes on in the streets. It's my job to tell you it's a very dangerous world out there. And the only thing separating you from them are the violent police who control themselves. What time is it? Did I blow through another? Dog's asleep. He's happy. He hears the voice. His master's voice. Your dogs are happy listening to the Savage Nation. More people listen to this show for the reason that they like I calm their dogs down, the sound of my voice. They don't even listen to me, the people who have the radio on. They're busy doing something else, but they turn the show on so that the dog is calm. My voice has a calming effect upon dogs and hysterical women. And I'm not doing that I'm not trying to insult women. But it does calm down hysteria. A calm male voice is very good for the nation. And I'm trying to calm the nation down. I turned the corner today on something. You notice I said that I wish good luck upon Obama and good luck upon everybody and good luck upon Axelrod. I've decided to become a unifier rather than someone who actually sees things as they are. And what I'm going to try and do now is be like King David and bring the nation together. And I feel the only way to heal the nation is actually by not attacking anybody. I may occasionally have a quip here and there, but it's pointless for me to attack anybody. It doesn't get us anywhere. I've decided it doesn't get me anywhere. They deserve it. Many people are so evil it's beyond belief or so anti-American, but it's not my job. I'm starting to think about it as a talk show host. I had like a revelation in the middle of the night. I've been having just strange revelations about myself, my place in the universe, and what I have to do going forward, whether it be another day, another year, another month, another week, another 10 years, whether in life or on the radio. I have a certain role to fulfill. And my role is changing. It's changed dramatically. You've changed. The country's changed. The politics of the country has changed. And I'm changing. How do you like that? I've just changed in front of your eyes. It's the same Savage. It's just a different approach to everything. You understand that? Same analysis. Same insightful analysis. But it's just going to be a different kind of approach to you, the audience. And there's a reason for it, which I don't have to explain to you. Okay, what are, I'm going to gain something by screaming, cut him apart, hang him, cut off his genitals. I could do that. That's a cheap shot. What good is that going to get us? Where are we going to go with that? We're going to get mad at the Marxists who have ruined America? What good has that done us? Most people are so stupid in this country, they don't even hear what you're saying to them anyway. They're worse than the Pavlovian dog. Colorado, Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I'm going to have to agree with you about these Republican candidates. And I lay the blame for the mediocrity on George W. Bush. And I come to that conclusion because of something you said a number of years ago. You said that Bush, Rove, that whole machine has prevented, and used baseball analogy, has prevented any hot young conservative star like you and I would agree with, the borders, language, and culture.
Yes.
Has prevented any of them from developing in the bullpen and rising to the top.
Absolutely. Rove is the man I distrust the least. He makes my flesh crawl.
Oh yeah, and I mean, you don't see.
I mean, distrust the most. Sorry, I mean distrust the most with that regard. He's an operative. That's all. He's an operative.
And that's why.
And for him to come out and start attacking Kane, I knew that Rove was basically simply a Republican tactician.
They're up to their old trick. They're now attacking Kane.
Yes. Well, and Fox News is fundamentally an outlet of the Republican Party. We've known that for a very long time. It doesn't make them bad. It doesn't make them evil. But they really ought to just come out and say that they're part and parcel of the Republican Party. And Rush is as well. Rush is a part of the Republican Party. That does not make Rush a bad man, but he is a absolute operative of the Republican Party in my analysis.
I'm afraid so. And so
he even said that. He even said he caught himself 2 years ago, Rush. And I respect the man. I respect what he's done for the medium. He even said he was a water carrier, and he's not going to be that way anymore. Remember that toward the end of Bush's reign? He said, I was a water carrier for the Republican Party. I'm not going to do it anymore. He was trying to, like, you know, triangulate the opposition who was onto him. But fundamentally, he really is a Republican operative, and so is the Fox News Network. That, again, does not make them bad people. Just as many outlets are clearly Democrat in Democrat camp or democratically controlled, fundamentally, it's a true with Fox, the Republican outlet, and I guess the country needs that. But I, as an independent conservative, can't sit here and say Fox News is great because of that.
My advice as a historian, when they walked in and said to me, we are now making loans to people who have no credit history and have no record of paying back anything, but that's what the government wants us to do, as I said to them at the time, this is a bubble. This is insane. This
wow,
is
that's
impossible.
Brilliant. That's brilliant, Newton. You got $1 million for that? I said it for nothing here on the show. I didn't need a grant from Freddie to say that, Newt. What'd you take their money for if they were so bad? Real honest guy. I turn it off already. I'm not in a rock and roll mood. I'm in a weird mood. I'm not focused. The country's in hell. The president has escaped. They sent him to Bali while the country almost burned to the ground with these lunatics spreading disease in the major cities. It took Bloomberg 2 months finally to do something. Now he's considered a bold leader. Here in San Francisco, they don't quite know what to do yet. Scabies, fleas, lice are spreading in the city, but they're trying to figure it out right now. They're busy dividing up the spoils of the tax base. So now the GOPAC tick is surging. Newt Gingrich, Spinalis Cavinian. Let me read you a little bit about what I wrote about him then and see if you disagree or agree. The Georgia GOPAC tick is a hard-shelled but soft-headed pest that sustains itself by sucking the blood out of any organism that will increase the tick's much-desired power drive. It gains natural advantages through its seeming intelligence and clever concealment of weaknesses. While the GOPAC tick aggressively latches onto any available host it can find, including prospective mates, it quickly retreats at the sight of organized resistance or the onset of illness. Promised a contract for America, instead gave us a contract on America. Like a Trojan horse, the GOPAC tick can change colors with the landscape and recently struck a deal with the limber leopard, seeing she will likely be the next power on the throne. That was pretty prescient. Several sightings of this rare tick have been reported recently in both Iowa and New Hampshire, perennial breeding grounds for pests of all sorts. This tick is also known to spread numerous diseases, including severe dysenteria and acute apotheosis. That's my summary of Newt Gingrich back in 2006. So if you want to read it, I can read it to you. It's sad because it's so true. I can read you the whole thing. It's exactly a repeat of history we're living through right now. I'll read you a little in the middle of it. They say Henry Clay was the great compromiser, but that was long before Gingrich. The tick, who upon encountering real resistance caved in faster than a punctured lung. I'm sorry. The GOPAC tick, we found out, is the kind of eager parasite that could have struck a deal with Pol Pot. Very well, you can beat us, shackle us, and make us dig our own graves. Just as long as we get to stay in your fine capital city. That's our final offer. In less time than it takes George W. Bush to read an issue of Ranger Rick, the Republican Revolution of 1994 withered into history, leaving about as much lasting impression as the Disco Revolution of 1974. Once the Republicans faltered, public confidence waned, and with the impeachment procedures that followed, GOPAC's once loyal constituents grew weary of the flea circus. Democrats actually gained seats from the Republicans in the impeach or not to impeach 98 election. All of these maneuvers merely revealed the true colors of this blood-hungry biter, an insect whose principles proved as soft and swollen as his gut. Even in the early days of his congressional career, the Tick's character was suspect. He was rumored to prey on his female staff members. Those rumors grew when this insect, apparently not wanting to suck any chemo with the blood, divorced his first wife while she was recovering from cancer. It's harsh, I admit it. But sarcasm is certainly a form of political satire, isn't it? Lovely, Gingrich. Why don't you pay a visit to the local orphanage and kick some kids in the shins while you're at it? The same deranged scenario repeated itself immediately after Gingrich stepped down as Speaker and left the House. He announced his divorce to his second wife right after she'd been diagnosed with MS. He left her for a congressional aide 23 years his junior. Even in his love life, the GOPAC tick is dangerous, bleeding his partner to the point of disease, then moving on to another host. Forget Time's Tick of the Year. The man deserves the Woody Allen Award for his cold dexterity in betraying and praying. Oh, God, that's cruel, Michael. Now, I know full well that only he who is without sin should swat that first pest. Don't get me wrong here. I don't want to smash this tick to extinction. I just want him to shut up and go away, but he won't. He keeps turning up looking for fresh blood. Although Gingrich is a private tick again, he has been nearly as pesky as Jimmy Carter. No, forgive me, not quite that pesky. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.
Pacific Air, how fearless flyboys, peerless aircraft, and fast flat tops conquered the skies in the war with Japan by David Sears, S-E-A-R-S, published by DaCapa Press. And it's the exhilarating epic story of the heroic fighter pilots whose fast-flying planes turned the tide in the Pacific Theater during World War II. If you want to be inspired, you know, this is the kind of book if you like this kind of thing. And you have to see where the admirals were. Like, you go to Hawaii, you see King Road or Nimitz Road. They're named for great admirals, great war leaders. That's when America was still great, when we remembered our great war leaders. Look at where we are today. They're interchangeable corporate executives. They could work for a soda company or a pencil manufacturer, and then they put them in the military or vice versa. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just a terrible thing of what's happened in this country. It's a result of 50 years of a mildewing of the mind. 50 years of a mildewing of the mind. This is what this is what one of the results are. Now, whether we could ever return to that place, I don't know. I really don't know if we could. I don't know if we can ever turn this nation around again. It's like a ship that's on the wrong course. You know, there's so many bad metaphors I could use that I'd rather not even bother. Anyway, it's a good book if you're interested and inspired by this. I love to watch military history at night. It's one of my favorite channels. And I like especially to see the segment on the Nazis, because you know they're all going to die in the end, that they brought such destruction to their own nation. How good they looked with their beautiful uniforms and their crisp slogans and their marching. And look how it ended. They destroyed their own nation. Why? You have to ask yourself why. And what is it America fears about nationalism? It's always Hitler, isn't it? But does nationalism always lead to fascism? No, it does not. There was a time when this country was highly nationalistic and it was the farthest thing from fascist. And that's the world that I actually still live in. Sort of a 1950s Boy Scouts view of America. That's the world I live in, and for me, that's my world. I'm not going to be warped by the leftists who have poisoned the minds of so many Americans. I still love America. I think America is the greatest country on earth despite all of its flaws. And the reason we see so many discontents in the nation today are certainly manifold. I'm not going to give you a single answer. But one of the primary reasons is that so many in the population have been brainwashed into believing that somebody owes them a living, that somebody else should pay them a lifetime sinecure for nothing, that they're entitled to a house, they're entitled to a job. That's if they even want to work. Many of them don't even want to work. They just want the house and the free food. That's how far it's fallen. They actually think there's something for nothing. I have a place up in a hill that I go to once in a while. And I went there recently, and there's a bobcat running around the property. And it actually tried to stare me down, and I stared him down because I carry a .357 Magnum. And I said, look, guy, here's the way it works. It's my house, not yours. I'm not an ordinary Marin County personality who's going to go call 911. Don't come down the steps because it'll... All right, I'm saying mind games. So the bobcat left. Doesn't make me a tough... Now this thing keeps coming around wanting to live on my deck. Every time I come out, it runs away. Why? He's like an occupier. The bobcat is like the Occupy movement. The Occupy movement, in other words, are like animals without the dignity of an animal. The animal wants a warm place for the coming cold weather and a dry place. He wants my couch and my porch to live on for the winter, like the bums in Zucchini Park, like the bums in Oakland. He's entitled to it. He's been told his whole life, like a bobcat. Hasn't been told, but he just assumes if it's empty, he's going to take it. But they've been told that they're entitled to a roof over there. Where is it written that you're entitled to a roof over your head? Who gave it to me? Who gave me a roof over my head? You did, you bum you? You gave me nothing. I'm not entitled to anything. Everything I have, I had to earn. Why should I give you something that you're not entitled to? Why should you rape me for more taxes? And I represent the majority of working Americans. I don't care whether they're a member of a union or not. They are taxed to death, and they're sick and tired of bums like that and the bum in the White House telling them that he's on their side. Why do you think they're doing it? If we had a legitimate federal government, this never would have happened.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Let's start with the basics. Being poor is not a crime. Let's start with that. There's nothing in the Bible that says that is you have superior virtue if you're rich. So let's start with that. But on the other hand, being wealthy doesn't make you a crook or a criminal. If you achieved your wealth through criminality or insider trading or using a public office to advance yourself while pretending to be a public servant, then you should go to jail. A crook is a crook is a crook. A liar is a liar is a liar. But did you know that 7 of the top 10 wealthiest members of Congress are, guess, Republicans? Wrong. Democrats. PJ Media has an interesting article. 7 of the 10 top wealthiest members in Congress are Democrats. Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics did a study. And it turns out that the public image of the Democrat Party is completely distorted. While President Obama castigates millionaires and billionaires, suggesting that anyone who has millions or billions is evil, and that they're largely white and conservative, the fact of the matter is 36 Senate Democrats reported an average net worth in excess of $1 million. But that's just the beginning. Who are the wealthiest Democrats? Well, they also point out that the wealthy Democrats tend to inherit their money, while the wealthy Republicans tend to earn their money. Senator John Kerry, D. Massachusetts. Senator Jay Rockefeller, Democrat, West Virginia. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California. All came by their fortunes, according to them, through marriage or inheritance. Senator John Kerry, who was born into wealth, has listed his net worth as high as $281 million, while his wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, is estimated to be worth $1 billion. She did not earn her wealth either. She inherited the money from her husband, Senator John Hines, who died in a suspicious airplane crash. Senator Rockefeller, representing dirt-poor West Virginia, they write, inherited his fortune from his family. He's worth $136 million. While the economy continued to tank in 2010, PJ Media writes, Pelosi reported her own wealth grew by 62%. Former Democrat Representative Jane Harman, Democrat California, in 2010 was listed as the third wealthiest member of Congress. She was married to the late stereo magnate Sidney Harman of Harman Kardon fame. Together, they were worth $493 million. And there are others. Among those who actually got their money by earning it include Republicans such as Darrell Issa, Republican California, a self-made millionaire who earned his wealth by creating the Viper Car security system. He is estimated to be worth more than $700 million. Senator Jim Risch, Republican Idaho, started as a rancher and attorney. His wealth, $88 million, and so forth and so on. Stay on the topic, by the way. Stay on the topic. It's not the wealthiest members of Congress that should be the issue of our discussion. We should be concerned about those members of Congress whose personal wealth has increased the most during their time in office. If one of these criminals came into office without a penny to their name, and four or five election cycles later as a public servant, they're worth a few million dollars, it means they stole it. And instead of term limits for the presidency or Congress, we absolutely should have a constitutional rule that prohibits any consecutive terms in office for congressmen or senators. You get it? There's more to it than meets the eye. It's not about wealth. It's not only about wealth. It's about how they made their money. And so, therefore, before we get into attacking the wealthy, let's get into how they made their money rather than just attacking the wealthy. And then ask yourself a question, and you know the answer to it. If you had a choice to associate with people who had more money than you or people who had a lot less money than you, who would you choose to hang around with? If you had access to people who could in some way help you in some way with money, wouldn't you rather be around them than people who had nothing? Of course, that's the way society has worked, whether it's in a village system or in our advanced society, if you want to call it advanced. I spent many, many years ago, that is, in straw huts in the Fiji Islands, the Tongas, Samoa, the Marquesas, as a plant collector. And I sat many a night in villages, and I watched the so-called primitive villages and the primitive society. I studied anthropology at the time. All societies are based fundamentally upon wealth and prestige and power. There's not a society on earth that's inverted. There's not a society on earth that respects the poor or elevates the poor to the top. There's not a society. I didn't say anyone hurts the poor. Did you hear what I just said? Nobody hurts the poor, but they don't put them at the top of the pyramid and say, oh, poor man, give us some advice. Yes, they'll help the poor man, but they don't say, oh, poor man, show us the way. They usually go to the rich man and say, show us the way. That is true whether it be in New Guinea, in the New Guinea Highlands. The man who has more pigs and more wives is the man they look up to, not the man who doesn't even have one pig or one wife. And I don't want to play with those words. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's take the callers now. We're talking about the dangers of the communist Occupy movements and how there is no leadership in this country. Robert in New York on WOR, fire away.
Michael, I'm disgusted with the leadership in New York. Let's put it this way. There is no leadership in New York. You have people talking about building businesses, protecting, looking for, you know, improving employment situation in New York, bad situations. Who is protecting the hundreds of business owners that are losing money each and every day that this vermin is urinating, defecating in the areas? Every day these businesses begin by cleaning out the you-know-what.
Yes.
Because these people are...
They're a threat to the public health and the public safety, and the city officials have an obligation to protect us from them. Bloomberg should be arrested right now for not doing his job. He is required to protect the public health and the public safety. And Bloomberg is not doing his job. He is a coward. He is afraid, just as the governor of New York, the governor of California, they are afraid of these protesters. You know that in Atlanta, tuberculosis was found in the park. Do you realize contagion could spread from this kind of situation? I'm trained in public health work. I understand this very well. How do you think contagious diseases begin? It begins in crowded settings like this, without hygiene, without sanitation, without heating, without running water. That's when contagion, that is how contagion breeds. It could spread through the whole city. Do you know this or not?
Of course.
Of course you know this. But where's Bloomberg? Off on a horse ranch in Suffolk County somewhere?
You know, he's planning another mosque being built around Ground Zero. I bet that's what he's up to these days.
Look, it's very chilling. The fact of the matter is, this is not just a group of college kids that we are looking at here. What about last year when several million came out around the country in support of Tea Party events? How come the media did not focus on the Tea Party movement? Why did the rats in the media call Tea Party attendees racist and violent when there was no racism and no violence that I saw? Why was that? Because the rats in the media are exactly like the bums in the tents.
You got to protect your own. I mean, that's the bottom line there.
The bottom line is that Mayor Bloomberg should be thrown out of office for not protecting the public health and the public safety. Let's be very unemotional about it. Public health, public safety, number one, number two jobs of a mayor. Is that right? Is he protecting the public health and the public safety?
Okay.
Well, he threw the bums out of Zucchini Park, and they sprayed down the old vegetables. I understand that. But some of them are still back there. Here in San Francisco, the bums from the Oakland area and the University of California came running over the bridge and just took over the downtown, the financial district. Where was our governor? Where was our union-planted Governor Brown? Nowhere. Where is the mayor? No one even knows San Francisco's mayor's name. They don't know who he is. Do you know that?
Well, the only thing I have to look forward to is New York gets real cold in the wintertime. So when it gets
That's
cold,
right. That is correct. But it hasn't gotten wet enough or cold enough yet for them to go home with the sniffles to their parents in Queens. But here in San Francisco, unfortunately, it never gets that cold, which is why we've always attracted bums, which is why it's always been a magnet for the malcontents of America. That is why it's always been a place that attracts both the brightest and the worst in America, San Francisco. The brightest and the worst come to this city. And right now, we are not seeing the brightest in the gutters. We're seeing the worst. Thank you for the call. Do you want to comment on any of what's going on here? Because I think I've covered this as well as I can. I don't know what else I can say to you. Here's something that was just sent to me by my friend Peter Chalko, and I saw this. White Americans give Obama a thumbs down by a 61% to 36% margin, while non-white Americans give the president a thumbs up by a more than 2-to-1 margin. Obama is increasing to polarize America. There is no question that he and his handlers have a strategy. There is no question that he and his handlers would like to see a polarized America, an America in total strife. And that is the only way he can get reelected. It's a well-thought-out plan to complete his total and absolute tyranny over America. He wants to divide us racially, economically. He is behind the class warfare you're seeing in the gutters of America now. Democrats, class warfare, race warfare. Class and race warfare.
Savage.
We're trying to lighten it up a little bit, talking only a little bit about Obama's socialism and about the death of the West. You know, just a little bit, very minor, and changing the set and frame to the extent that we can without losing the core of the show, which is the madness of America and the fact that most of you are perplexed by the insanity that has been imposed upon you by the radical communist regime that has taken a hard line against the American people. So I'll go to the callers now. Clayton in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I married a liberal, and trying to get her way of thinking more of on a logical sense.
No. Let me explain something. I'll do it in a way that I don't alienate my women audience. A friend of mine is a young guy, and his father said to him, all women are nuts, some are more nuts than others. So let's start with that. Now, I don't believe that's true. There are women who are more rational than most of the men I know. But by and large, you have to understand, if you married a woman who's emotionally different than you, which you would expect. That's what you were attracted to, right? You were attracted to her because she was different than you. You can't try to change her thinking, and don't try to change it because it's not going to work. I think you should live with each other and have differences of opinion. That's the only thing I can suggest. The more you try to change her, the worse it's going to get, Clayton.
Well, she thinks that I voted for Obama just because he was a black, or I didn't vote for Obama for because he was a black guy. And then I tried to show her the, about the Al Gorlone crime family and trickle-up poverty. And I was telling her to read some stuff out of that, and I snuck out of the room, and then I looked back in there, and she was still reading it. And then I came back in the room a minute or two later, and she had put it down. And I was just like, well, you need to read some more of that. It's a great. It's going to teach you a little bit about what's been going on in the past, but she's a teacher, and she's, you know.
All right, so wait, so she's an educated girl. Did she acknowledge that she read it?
Yeah, she did, and I try to, you know, try to talk to her about it when we'll go out and have some wine or whatever, and I will start talking about politics, and that's where the dividing line is all about the politics type thing. And
how long have you been married, Clayton?
2.5 years, but we were in kindergarten together.
Okay, you don't want to lose your marriage, is that correct?
No, absolutely not. She's a sweet
girl. All right.
Girl.
Then don't look for a civil war in your household by trying to convert your wife to your way of thinking. If you have that division, it's going to stay that way. It may change slightly. She may move a little bit more in your direction. But it's unlikely she's going to one day wake up and say, you know, Clayton, you were right all along. The country is a wreck because of fiscal, social. She's not going to go there. It's her fundamental orientation is what it is. You're young, though. How old are you?
I'm 38.
You're not so young. Do you have children?
I have one daughter from a previous relationship, and we're trying to work on building a family and everything. And you know, she's a sweet girl. It's just had some fertility.
Now, the reason I'm asking you that is usually when people get older, they become more conservative once they face the fiscal realities of life. That's when they start to change their thinking. And the only way, here's the last piece of advice, because we could talk about this for forever and bore people. The only area she's liable to move in your direction readily is in the area of fiscal conservatism. If you could explain to her what fiscal conservatism is, that no one gets anything for nothing, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and that you can only tax people so much. Go to the article from today, print it up from my website, and show her that 80% of the people work for the federal government in Cuba, and they have free everything, but they only make $20 a month. And explain to her that's what happens when a government starts to give out too many jobs. And remember, what's Obama trying to do now? He's trying to create more government jobs, isn't he? Or if it's not outright government jobs with the so-called jobs program, he wants to give it out through his cronies, so that they work for the government through grants or contracts. It's the same thing. Clayton, thanks for the call. Or have her read Abuse of Power, the novel.
Savage.
I think I have the answer. Yes, I say liberalism is a mental disorder, but a study just came out that said antidepressants are now used by 11% of Americans. Well, I'll go on record and tell you right now, I get depressed, but I would never use an antidepressant. I'm depressed from Obama. I'm depressed from the Democrat Socialists of America. I'm depressed from a lack of law and order. I'm depressed by the degenerates in the school system. I don't need a medication to tell me I'm living in nirvana. Antidepressants used by 11% of American ages 12 and older. You hear what the doctors have done to you? Antidepressants keep a lot of people functional, according to new data from the so-called federal government. 11% of Americans ages 12 and older take the medication. Most common prescription drug used by people ages 18 to 44. Almost 25% of all women ages 40 to 59 have been prescribed antidepressants by shyster doctors. So that's what's going on. The medical pharmaceutical establishment has doped up the population. They have doped up the population, which is how a man like Obama can wind up in the White House. You're taking your soma, you feel nothing, you think nothing, you know nothing, and yet you do what you're told. So therefore, the manipulators can get away with it. A guy like Schumer can get up there and say that the rich are the bad, the rich should pay more money, and you don't even know he gets his money from the rich. Paxil, Celexa, Effexor, Wellbutrin, Zoloft, poisons, chemical toxins, every last one of them. poisons. They're poisoning your mind and poisoning your liver. Poisoning you. Flush them down the toilet.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Superstar Savage soars in the webcasting area. And what's his name? I almost called him Obama. Rush Flatline. Why did I almost say Obama when I said Rush? Why did I associate Rush with Obama? I don't get it. He certainly opposes Obama. At least he appears to. I mean, the scripts he reads every day would lead us to believe he opposes Obama. But I don't know who I'm going to wake up to tomorrow saying what. We're living in a strange time where so many people are shifting alliances because they see which way the wind blows, that yesterday's conservative could be tomorrow's Obama supporter. Because it's been happening, by the way. If you look very, you listen very carefully to Fox News, since Murdoch got in trouble with the scandal, with the this, with the eavesdropping in England, and then the Obama went after him here, they moved all the way over, you know, almost touching hands with Obama on so many policies. Not entirely, of course, but it's happening in talk radio as well. I don't think I've changed. I change in areas where I think it's worth changing. But just to change to survive is not necessarily smart. Because then what do you stand for? What are your principles? Where's the truth in that? You know what I'm saying? And in that sense, I would have to say that I'm not a Buddhist who is seeking nirvana by ridding myself of all forms of desire. Nor am I really from the Greek school to see and know fearlessly and rightly. Actually, maybe closer to the Greek school than anything else. I'm not Greek by heritage. I don't even like lamb. And I do work for a living. But I the Greeks taught, it was an injunction to see and know fearlessly and rightly. And the Hebrews commanded to fear God and accomplish righteousness. Now, I wouldn't associate independent political views with knowing to fearing God and accomplishing righteousness. I would say an independent political orientation would be closer to the Greek injunction to see and know fearlessly and rightly. It has nothing to do with nirvana and Buddhism and to rid myself of all forms of desire. And many of the, you know, I'm going to make a jump now, but many of the bums in the parks who claim that they're occupying this, occupying that, are pretending to be somewhat along the lines of Buddhists, freeing themselves from all forms of desire in order to escape from the chagrins of life. But it's all a lie. It's all a charade. It's all part of this college mentality. You could see it. You could see it in everything that they do, from the sexcapades to the money that they're raising. Let's go to the callers. William in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. Always enjoy your show.
And thank you.
I'm a student of Chinese medicine, not an expert.
Yes.
But according to Chinese medicine, each person measure their life is according to number of air, number of time that they inhale and exhale.
Hmm.
So
okay, so you're confirming that a man should not stress himself with too vigorous exercise, correct?
Yes, correct. And it's confirmed by the Chinese medicine for 3,000 years, 5,000 years, I don't know.
So, you know, well, look, William, what I was saying was I never believed that running to exhaustion was a good idea. I think it's a disastrous idea for the human body. And yet American doctors teach people now to get cardio to work out excessively until they sweat and they're panting. And I say it's absurd. It's wrong. I think you're saying that you agree with me.
Yes.
So what form of exercise do you use? The slow movement, the Tai Chi type of movement?
Yes, it's actually the Tai Chi type of movement, and they try to control their breathing during the exercise as slow as possible.
Oh, so in other words, the breathing should be slow so that you don't increase the amount of breaths.
Yes, and deep, so you get more oxygen into your system.
That's amazing. Yeah, I never really understood that. I knew that there was breathing involved with martial arts, but I never conceptualized that it was slow breathing. That's very intriguing. So, William, what kind of medicine do you teach it or practice it?
I'm still studying it. But actually, a lot of those are good Chinese doctors. They don't use medicine a lot. They use food.
And yeah, I know they use food. The problem is most of the Chinese restaurants I eat in, I need a doctor after I get through. William, thanks for the call. I appreciate it very much. Well, oh, come on, I'm just pulling your leg. It's so greasy, your lips stick together. And I go to I keep going back to the same place. I complain about it, then I go on my lips. I need anti-glue to unglue my lips from the place I go to on Sansome Street. Don't tell them, they're nice people. I'm not going to go in there anymore. $16 for a seafood special? You need a microscope to find the four little, you know, the sewer shrimp. That's terrible. I shouldn't eat shrimp at all. I've sworn off it. Remember how many times I've told you I don't eat shrimp anymore? Then I wind up eating shrimp. It's like saying I don't watch HBO. I'm canceling it. Then I find myself watching it. There's certain things I can't do without. And I do like shrimp, but it's a dirty animal. It's a dirty organism, truthfully. By the way, talking about food, I noticed that you want to see capitalism, everything tied up into one story. A guy invests, I think, $5 million in Las Vegas to build a shrimp farm, one of the largest shrimp farms in America, in the middle of the desert. And he's growing shrimp in artificial beds to supply the shrimp that is consumed in all of the big hotels in the Las Vegas Strip, which makes sense because shrimp cocktails are very popular and the water is cleaner, when you think about it, than the imported shrimp, which comes from Asia, where the waters are polluted. Let's be clear. I reluctantly eat shrimp when I know it's from the Gulf of Mexico. And even there, all right, it's pre-oiled. I don't know how clean it is. I try to eat nothing with a shell on it, in truth. But I don't want to get into food at all, okay, because that's not an obsession of mine anymore. I'd rather talk about politics if you want. You want to talk about October Trend Report. Michael Savage's trend is up 27% in streaming talk radio. Limbaugh has flatlined. Groucho Marx has declined completely. Wallbanger has declined completely. It's very interesting. Why? I mean, why are the dynamics of the Savage Nation going up? You know, you wouldn't know it. I mean, no one calls me. No one says, come on the show for your opinion of talk radio. They have people you never heard of. And I've given up caring about it, truthfully. Yes, I'd like to be called more. Yes, I'd like them to say, conservatives said this about Herman Cain, and they would quote me because I said he's the great black hope. You would think someone would have picked up on it, but they haven't. You know, they just haven't picked up on it. I think it's a great line. I hope Herman Cain, you know, rides through this attack on him by the anti-black media. Make no mistake about it, this is an anti-black media that has finally found a method to attack a black man safely, which is on the issue of sex, because as you well know, there's a stereotype about black males and their sexual prowess. And what they're doing is the left-wing media is playing into that very stereotype. They are exploiting particularly white women's fear of black men. You know, you want me to really get into the psychodynamics of what they're doing to Herman Cain? They did the same exact thing, as you well know, to Clarence Thomas. And they're doing it again. What, Clarence Thomas read a Playboy at work? That's the worst they could come up with? And he looked at a woman and said, honey, you're beautiful? Wow, that really should have disqualified him. You know, really should have disqualified him. How about looking into Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Or how about looking into the two clowns that Obama appointed? The two unqualified clowns appointed because of their gender and race. They were never qualified to be on the Supreme Court. But you never heard one word about the two clowns that Obama picked out of the so-called Ivy League. Instead, they attack this decent man. You know, I don't care whether or not he wins. I'd like him to win. I don't like what they're doing to him. It's unfair. Attack him for his policies, but they couldn't win. They couldn't get him on his tax plan. They try to make a mockery of him until they realize that they were picking on him too much and he looked like a black man being picked on by the white vermin in the media. So now where are they going? With sexual claims. So what if the National Restaurant Association paid off some bimbos who said he looked at him and said, let's have a drink together. So what? That should disqualify him? How about the crimes and misdemeanors of Obama? How about the absolute crimes and misdemeanors of Obama that these rats in the media won't talk about? Now I'm getting too excited. I've just taken weeks, if not months, off my life, according to Asian medicine, because I've gotten my blood pressure up and my pulse rate is up. That's not good. So I think I have to go back to the Buddhist way of approaching the show, which is quiet, peaceful. I had to be quiet and peaceful now. I think I may become Dr. on Savage. I am not seeking nirvana because I frankly almost fall asleep when I achieve nirvana of my soul. I have serenity of my soul and I'm bored to death. You see, that's the problem. I have a natural serenity of soul called nirvana, particularly at night after the show is over and I've eaten dinner. And I lay down in bed to watch television. I approached Ivana from the alpha waves of the television. I actually approached the highest good of mankind when I'm laying in bed watching television. I was seeing one of the things I like about television at night is that you can cruise around and find so many interesting things. Don't underestimate the genius behind some of these shows. So I was watching a show on 1,000 Ways to Die on Spike Television. I know you say, oh, that's below. You know it is. It was very funny. And then there was another show on all the germs around us. And they show a guy who goes to a, what do you call it? Oh, yoga studio, very popular against today. Especially amongst women who are trying to suppress their sexual desires. They get into yoga for some reason. I don't know if it works. Allegedly it does. But nevertheless, they show a guy going into a yoga studio, and then they do a microscopic zoom into the yoga mat that he's on, and they show the sweat coming off his body from the yoga. I didn't even know you sweat during yoga. I don't understand that part of it, but I don't like sweating when I exercise. I think it's very unhealthy. So they show the guy sweating while performing yoga on a mat with the foot up in the air and the this and the that. And then they show his droplet of sweat or the droplets of sweat hitting the yoga mat and how the moisture invigorates or reinvigorates the bacteria that are dormant in the mat from the last person who used the mat and how they start to proliferate, the bacteria do, on the yoga mat. And it's true. I don't like gyms at all, whether it's yoga or I don't go to gyms. I don't like the touching. It's like a supermarket cart. A gym to me is like a giant supermarket cart. You know, touching the barbell equipment and the guy. I don't know, the whole thing. I got dumbbells I use in the morning out on the deck looking at the bay. I do very mild exercise. You're not interested. I'm just telling you. The dog is even bored of it. I do a mild dad. I do some push-ups. I ride a bicycle and I pray a lot. And I thank God for giving me the serenity of my soul that I basically have. To me, I confuse serenity with boredom. I think that boredom and serenity are often confused. Many of us say that we're bored. We're actually serene. We don't even understand we've achieved nirvana. No, the next time you're bored, realize that you're actually serene. It's just that you're an American, and you've been told that if you're feeling calm, you're actually bored, and that's all part of the consumerism of the society to make you go out and either consume a movie or a book or buy a meal or look for entertainment. But you don't really need any of that. It reminds me of Huxley's Brave New World, where they conditioned the embryos in the factories, you remember? Where they take the embryos and then they raise them as little babies, and then they condition them to reject pictures of the countryside. They give them mild electric shocks in Brave New World, and then the observer says, well, why are they giving the little babies electric shocks as they're crawling towards a picture of the great outdoors? And the man says, that's because the state has deemed that consumerism is the most important attribute of any member of society, and we do not want them to go into the wilderness or into the woods and enjoy nature because they're not spending anything. And notice what I just said to you. How many of you go out into the outdoors today without buying hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of consumer gear? How many of you still walk in nature without having purchased some garbage? None of you. See, I don't even go in the woods anymore. I used to love going to the mountains above Lake Tahoe in the winter. I used to like to go there in a blizzard or a near blizzard condition, and I would walk. I mean, not to die or anything. I won't go there anymore. I don't like ski-doos. I can't stand noise. Why would I go out there to listen to some moron shooting by on an outboard motor? The same way someone hates me for going by in my boat with an outboard motor, or hates me in my powerboat while they're going out in a kayak. I understand the world. You know, it depends upon your perspective and where you're at. Nevertheless, the fact of the matter is you do not go into the wilderness anymore without gear. And that is because you become a perfect consumer of things. Look at all of these stores, the sporting goods stores, the climbing, rock climbing. You have to buy things to climb a rock. You have to buy things, to go for a nature hike. You have to buy things to hike. Why? Because you're the perfect consumer. You see how it works? So enjoy it. Buy the things. But just understand, you're not holier than thou because you're going out in the woods. I'll be right back. Savage.
What's SDS?
Students for Democratic Society.
Oh, you mean like the one from Weather Underground?
Yeah, SDS is backed by popular demand.
It is. Yes, yeah. We want to unite the 99% to fight for our rights. So this is more than just camping in a public square. It's about organizing. Before this movement even started, the SDS called it Awakening the Sleeping Giant. It's our job to awaken, mobilize, and empower the sleeping giant, which is the 99%. The significance of the 1% and the 99% is it signifies class struggle, the struggle between the oppressed class and the master class. We're socialist or leftist or anarchist of some variety. We're kind of a multi-tendency organization. We're not, not everybody considers himself a Marxist, but most people consider themselves leftist of some variety or another, you know.
You said anarchist. Doesn't that have a bit of a negative connotation?
What we found out is there's all different kinds of anarchists, okay? In fact, there's more different kinds of anarchists than there are different kinds of Protestants, okay? You know, you have everything from green pacifist anarchists to black bloc window breakers and all points in between. The first step is the organizing the masses, okay? When we organize the masses, we'll come up with all kinds of creative ways to exert our power and to take power back that's been taken from us. There can be no condescending saviors. We have to organize the masses. We have to reach out and mobilize them and incorporate them and empower them. So that's our strategy.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Talk radio is not a dying medium. It is stronger than ever. It is stronger than it's ever been before. In my 16 years in radio, I wouldn't have lasted a week with another syndicator. I could never have sat down after a show and been deconstructed where they say, well, you said this, tomorrow don't say that. That's would have been the end of it for me. I've had total freedom. I need total freedom to function. And I want to thank you again. I'm glad we're going to be working together. And I know the American people, who particularly the millions and millions of people who listen to this show, are going to breathe a sigh of relief that we have this year to look forward to together. It's had its ups and downs. But right now, we have seen the talk radio and the Savage Nation are responsible for the mighty blow that is being struck against socialism in America. And I believe this will grow when it forces the Democrats off the political landscape for having introduced Democrat socialism and worse to the United States of America.
Savage.
New York WOR. Daniel, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael, at the beginning of your show, you asked why people listen to you. Well, I tell you, I've listened to talk radio for years, and I've listened to you for years. You're the only place I can go where you're balanced, you're multifaceted. You give us the truth, and right now, America is in bad, bad shape. And I get inspiration from you. You talk about food. You talk about little Teddy. You're very human. You're ordinary, but then you're extraordinary. You're a man beyond your years. And I just wish and
beautiful. You're like a relative. You're like a relative I wish I had.
I mean, it's just incredible what you do. You inspire me. I work 14, 15-hour days. You pick me up at the end of the day, and you keep me going. You inspire me. I start writing my own stuff at night on how I can be a better
really?
Person.
Really? That's interesting. Let me ask you something. I did a diversion in the last segment about these old stories of mine that I found, and I read from one of them. Did you find that distracting, or did you find it was a good part of the show?
Oh, I find... It was refreshing. I still think about when you wrote about Dead Man's Pants, because as a kid, I lived through that. I wore Dead
Man's Pants. Oh, interesting. You know, I told my agent I want to publish all of my unpublished writings in one or two volumes or one big volume, and he said, why? I said, because it will distinguish me from all the other people in the media. None of them have this. They have what they have, okay? I don't have to knock them. But none of them have this. None of them was a writer for 25 years, and none of them have the range of my interests and my abilities. And I said, that's the only way to distinguish myself. I don't want to do just another this or another that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're courageous on top of that. When nobody else is courageous, you don't worry about anything. You just forge ahead with your own...
Well, I am. You see, this is not true. I do worry about it. I worry greatly about the evils of people in the government and what they might do to me. I do. But there's nothing I can do about it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. It's a beautiful day, by the way. Had a stress EKG. Guess what? I have a heart. I didn't know that. I mean, so many people think I don't. My dog knows I have one. The technician said, come and look at your Doppler. There's your heart beating in digital. I said, that's pretty amazing. I said, many people don't think I have one. He said, you really have one. I said, well, my dog knows it, as I just said. Anyway, you know, I got to tell you something. I come out of the stress EKG. I go outside. It was a beautiful day out here. And I made a prayer to God. I said, simple. I said, thank you for giving me this life and my family. Bingo. Is that so hard? It was a beautiful moment. Does that make me religious? I don't know what it makes me. All I can tell you is thank God for everything. Even thank God for Barack Obama, because I think America's flirtation with communism will finally produce the salvation that we've all been looking for. This will, in history, if we should survive this gangster, if we should survive this corruption, if we should survive the most criminal administration in American history, $1.2 billion in more guaranteed solar loans to one of the criminals that he put on the Jobs Council. I've never seen anything like it. It's a banana republic. It's lower than Chavez's country. That's what's happened under this faker. And you let him get away with it. I can't help you. I can't help you anymore. I've done all I can do. It's taken its toll on me. I hope it hasn't taken its toll on you. But I got to tell you something. After this flirtation with communism, this faker, this communist faker, America's going to come to its senses. We're going through a class war, make no mistake about it. Oh, yes, you're living through a war right now. You're living through a revolution. You've got the Tea Party movement on the one side. You've got the Occupy Wall Street vermin on the other. You got to ask yourself, why does the left attack private capital with such passion? The answer is, well, there's a class war. But as Spengler in the Asian Times says, it's not the sort of class war that you read about in the mainstream press. Because the truly indigent, the young African-American men, most of whom are now unemployed, have little to do in this class war. And large corporations, for the most part, are bystanders as well. They will make their peace with whoever wins the battle. This is a war of survival between the productive middle class on the one hand, the members of the Tea Party, and the dependents of the state on the other. The drug, sex, and rock and roll unemployable bums who think that a government job will save them, or they should be made the CEO of a corporation after smoking dope in a dirty, filthy park and having sex with vagrants. But the fact of the matter is taxes are killing us, and the reason taxes are killing us is because this is the most corrupt administration in history, which follows the second most corrupt administration in history, which is George Bush's war spending and the government contracting, in my estimation. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The reason I played Victory at Sea is because I am victorious. I am victorious. You may think I don't exist, and yet my best-selling books, including a novel. Look, I wrote a novel, right? Oh, you wrote a novel. You wrote a novel. Why, that's my purloin. That's not yours. 6-7 weeks on the New York Times list. How does it happen? If I'm never mentioned on any of the blogs, if I'm never allowed on any shows, including the Faux News Network, how is it that my show keeps surging? And what do you mean your show is surging? That's nonsense, Savage. Well, I just got the data. My ratings just went up again, another 27% in streaming talk radio. What does streaming mean? It means people don't listen to this show on a radio, but people listen to this show via the internet or on a, I guess, on a cell phone. So they did a ratings analysis of the 25 streaming talk shows. You know what they concluded? This is not my headline, it's there. Superstar Savage skyrockets. 27%. Limbaugh plateaus. Levin flatlines. He was flatlined at birth. Hannity dips. Well, there's only how many years you're going to pick up a hammer. If I had a hammer, I'd also dip after a while. My forearm would hurt. Bennett drops. Bennett has never even started. Bortz is a bore. Because, of course, Kudlow, never heard of him. There it is. Michael Savage has a 10.8 share, up 27.1% for October. Limbaugh is at a plus 0.8%. He's a flatliner. I am number two in the talk stream area, which is a big deal for me, and it explains a lot. It actually explains why my books sell, even though I'm basically not heard of in the mainstream media. Why? I don't know. I'm not heard of, but I am not heard of. We had a story about Cain being smeared by the vermin in the media, right? And I said, even if it's true that he said something to a woman at work or he said something to two women at work, that should disqualify him? I mean, should that disqualify Cain? I said he's the great black hope. Now, that should have been a statement heard around the world. I've said a lot of other things. I've said a lot of other things that people have appropriated, but that's the way the world is, and I've gotten used to it. If you're a wordsmith, you're going to have your words ripped off. That's the name of the game, and I'm not complaining about it. But I got a question for you. Why are my ratings on the streaming area skyrocketing while Russia's stagnating? You know, I have people who said to me, well, of course you're number two in streaming data. Why? Well, because your show isn't on all the stations like Russia's are. Well, if Russia's on all the stations, then why is he number one? He should be zero or number 26. In other words, if Russia's heard in every station in America, which he is, the big stations, ABC, right? Former ABC, now a Citadel Cumulus. You would think, why listen to him on the stream if he can be heard in every city? And yet people do. And he's got a monster 16.8 share, but he's flatlining, right? But if I'm not on the major cities, I'm on in New York on WOR, beautiful station, big market, okay? It's a big market. It's my biggest station. And yet I still have a 10.8 share, it went up 27% the ratings in the streaming. Why am I surging in streaming? I have my own ideas as to why. And it's related to the TSL October trend report. Those of you in the radio business know what TSL is. It used to be the most important sub-factor in ratings, but it was eliminated in order to placate certain demographics, which have very low time spent listening. Let's put it to you that way. People with minimal attention spans who listen to music and stuff of that nature flip around the dials much more than do people who listen to talk radio. Time spent listening used to be a component of ratings. And what happened was they jigged up the ratings, and they jiggled them around so much to make certain that conservative talk shows would go down. That's all. The economics of polarization. We have an irrational nation. We're going through a communist revolution on one hand. We have a war between the productive middle class, which is me and you, and the dependence of the state on the other. It's an interesting story. I suggest we talk about it at another time. It's too complicated, I think, for talk radio. My instincts say the headline is enough. I'd rather talk about testing for STDs in Zucchini Park. The drug, sex, and rock and rollers in these Occupy movements, who God answered our prayer with the snowstorm in New York. They went home with the sniffles. But before they went home to mommy in Brooklyn and Queens and New Jersey to regroup before their next attack in the spring when things straight after they get through the winter, they stopped at a free clinic, normally for bums and indigents, to get testing for herpes, HIV, because they've been apparently doing things in the tents that have nothing to do with organizing, community organizing. It has to do with another aspect of humanity. Testing for STDs in Zucchini Park, which confirms what my mother said, that sex is dirty. I told that to a doctor the other day. I was at a dance club. I went to a Latin dance club on Sunday. I met a guy I know. I see him every once in a while. He's a great guy. I love him. This guy, if you ever met him, you'd never believe this guy. Tall, thin, musician, dancer, mambo nick, and also a very highly decorated combat veteran from Vietnam. He was written about. Very few people know him. In fact, I love this guy so much that I'm going to make him a main character in the sequel to Abuse of Power. I mean, Tony Antonori's in Abuse of Power, right? He's a former Green Beret medic who helps Jack, blah, blah, blah. He's a great character. But now that I met this guy, who's a musician, a dancer, an emergency room doctor, and a phenomenal warrior, this guy is a great guy, okay? But he's not like me. We're very different in some ways. So I started to tell him stories about, I don't know how it came up. I said, you know, my mother always said sex was dirty. He started to laugh hysterically. He reminded me of a guy that, I remember when my father-in-law was dying in a hospital in New York. Great guy, World War II Navy veteran. Wonderful man, you know, he also died too young, father-in-law. He was, he had cancer. He was in like a hospital on the border of Queens and Brooklyn. I have a big hospital there where they all go. You know, it's like the elephant burial grounds. And he was a quiet man, my father-in-law, but, and he was of Christian heritage, the father-in-law. And this guy loved to listen to a Jewish guy in the death ward, as it were. I hate to say it that way, but that's where it all ended up. Who was a storyteller. All of these Christian men loved listening to the Jewish guy who was laughing in death's face, telling them one joke after another. And it reminded me of me at the dance hall the other night with this guy. He was cracking up. So when I said to him, I don't know how it came up. Probably it was a sexist remark about one of the girls, to be honest. That's what men basically talk about. And that's the way it. So I said something to him, well, you know what? My mother was right. Sex is dirty. I can't even tell you the context in which it came up, but you can pretty much figure it out. He laughed hysterically. He said, your mother was absolutely right. I said, she said it. I said, she actually said it on the radio show many years ago. People cracked up to this day. They sent me emails about it. And we have a real, real treat for you on the Savage Nation today, which is the original tape, not of my mother saying sex is dirty. I don't think she said that on the air. It was an incredible phone call 7-8 years ago, which we got to talk about later on. Anyway, I got so many things. I'm so filled with stories and reality and politics that I can't just sit here and read you the news, views, and reviews. I'm going to give you the whole gestalt of it, all rolled up in one ball, which is what I'm famous for, free association. Let's start with a quick caller right now. WOR New York City, Rob, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Why are you calling?
My mind is your ratings are going up because you're a genius of the 21st century.
All right, that's pretty. Naturally, I like hearing that.
Well, I'm not trying to patronize you. You know, I just started listening to you recently. My brother recommended me. I watched a couple of clips on YouTube, and right away, I have people insulting and attacking me. How could you listen to him? I said, this guy's brilliant. It's like we're twins separated at birth. I mean,
Right. They always attack what they're jealous of. You got to understand that the world is built upon a number of foundations, including negative foundations, and one of the negative foundations is jealousy. And jealousy drives a lot of rage. That's why they're attacking Herman Cain as well. They're jealous of his popularity. They cannot believe a man as simple and plain-talking as Herman Cain could be surging in such popularity, so they're smearing him. You know, I mean, I've been subject to it as well. By the way, have you had a chance to read my book, Abuse of Power, yet?
I want to read that, and the liberalism is a mental disorder also I'm looking to get my hands on.
Well, I'm going to send you Abuse of Power, since that's what I'm talking about today, as well as Trickle Up Poverty, which is a great book. Treadmill Stress Test from Dr. W. for Michael Savage has ordered a stress test on November 1st, 2011, 12 noon. So at the end of the stress test, the doctor said, I stopped him when I was at 70% of my, of 100, you know, 150, my heart rate. I didn't want to go to 150. He said, do you exercise regularly? I said, I bicycle every day. I said, but I never get my heart rate up. He said, what? I said, yeah, I've been doing it for like 60 years. I've been bicycling since I could walk. Over 60 years, as a matter of fact. He says to me, oh, no. He said, in order to get cardiovascular fitness, blah, blah, blah. And he gives me the standard AMA view, which is that you got to push yourself and sweat and have your heart pounding and think you're going to die of a heart attack in order to get cardio. So I said very quietly, I said, look, my father died very young. My grandfather died very young. I said, to me, each day is a victory and a miracle. I have a different philosophy about exercise, and it's more along the lines of the Asian philosophy, which is never, ever push your body past a certain point, slowly and gradually. Okay, I said, I bicycle until my body is warm, or I swim until my body is warm. I don't swim until my heart is thumping. He said, well, you really ought to, blah, blah, blah. He goes into it. So I'm more into the Zen thing of it, if you want to put it in that 60s context. As I was leaving, I'll make it quick. The technician in the room says to me, he says, you know how many young guys we see in their 30s here who are triathletes whose hearts and valves are shot from pushing themselves too much with enlarged hearts? I said, all. He said, basically all of them. Listen, you don't do that to a human body. It was not designed for that. The human body is designed for something entirely different, moderate exercise. Don't push yourself. You're gonna stroke out or you're going to get a heart attack. At least that's my view of it. And why do I have that view? A, I've studied it. B, it's intuitive. And C, take a look at how many young guys in their 30s have dropped dead from extreme exercise. I'll be right back.
Savage.
In order for you to understand that I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich and why, I turned the clock back to 2006 to my book, The Political Zoo. It's not even available for sale, so I don't think I'm hawking a book. Let me start it so you don't think I'm just talking. Newt Gingrich, Spinellus Cavinian. Those of you who went to high school and remembered there were binomials or two Latin names for each animal, genus, species, and for each plant. That's the way it's done. Like Katie Couric was known as Perkiannoius. That might help you figure out what I'm talking about. Let's see some other people who are in there. So you don't think I'm just picking on Newt Gingrich. Let's see. At that time, there were other people around. Kofi Annan is gone. Bono is gone. He's finished. Here, Barbara Boxer was known as the California cackle hen, who was indigenous to Brooklyn, New York, but regularly migrates to the left coast after maturation, where it can better peck itself up the food chain. And her binomial was California cackless. That's funny. Now, if you think that it was all about Democrats, you're wrong. George W. Bush was picked on. The Texas Bumblebee, he was called, and his Latin name was Stingus Bumblus. The Texas Bumblebee was transplanted from the East Coast, where it evolved into a hardier, more persistent species. Its natural enemies, like the donkey, are constantly underestimating the bee's sting. They think that a good swat or two should dispatch this gritty little bumblebee to oblivion, and even after repeated stings, they refuse to learn their lesson. That was pretty good. I actually did it in a way that I complimented him. Hillary Clinton, another wonderful person, who I named the Limber Leopard, and her Latin binomial was Peronista Manipulatus. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous, but identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Let's go to Sacramento, California. K-Mal, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I've been a longtime listener of your show, sir, for the last 7 years now. And
thank you.
I want to make a comment about Herman Cain because I am black, I'm a conservative, and I'm a Christian. I grew up around people like Herman Cain, and when I see these vicious attacks by the white liberals coming out of him, it just makes me cringe. But let me tell you something. There is some hope, though. There is some hope in the fact that he's rolling on.
But don't you agree the reason he hasn't cracked from all of this, all of these lies, is because he has faith in God and a loving wife who he really does love? I think that's why he's able to go on.
You're absolutely correct, Dr. Savage, and he's going to keep going on. And I have some hope that he can win. The other folks are done. They're through and finished, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I would say Perry is finished. Romney is looking very, very much stronger every day, because Romney's playing the presidential role. He's not attacked Cain when he was given the bait yesterday by the lowlifes from CNBC. He wouldn't take the bait. And so Romney's looking very good. But the Tea Party people, meaning the real conservatives in America, are really not enamored of Romney. But let's go back to Mr. Cain. You agree with me that they're after him, one, because he's a conservative, two, because he's black, and three, because he's a true Christian. Wouldn't you say those are the three reasons?
Dr. Savage, you're absolutely right, because when I was going to school in about 15, 20 years ago in high school and college, I've been around these white liberals, and the people have called me and said I'm an Oreo cookie and tell me that I'm black on the outside and white on the inside. It's just absolutely.
But you see how you're laughing? Because you have a good sense of humor. You never let it get to you. You don't have the same nasty nature as some of the race hustlers out there who most of us detest. And you had to overcome all of that hazing from your own people, let alone white people who may not have liked you.
Oh, I've got it from both sides, sir. Both sides.
Yeah. Did you hear the call who said Herman Cain is not a real black man because he's like a white man? Did you hear that caller by any chance?
I've heard many calls like that, sir.
I could not believe what she was saying. I was saying, what, you mean he has to be an angry, screaming, threatening race hustler to be a real black? That's what I said to her.
He doesn't act like the hustler in the White House, Barack Hussein Obama, who's an absolute, he's just an absolute Trojan horse.
I agree. You talk about a man who's hustled his whole life using race, the race card. It's Barry Obama.
You're absolutely right. And when he hung around people like Dr. Cornel West and Louis Farrakhan, Jeremiah Wright, who are all race hustlers in a high Jesse.
Yeah, Cornel West is like a grade Z mentality who has gotten by with his threats, his intimidation, and that whole buck tooth thing, you know, always doing that tooth thing on everybody and that yelling and that screaming and scaring the white liberals at Harvard. That guy's a Harvard professor like my poodle is.
You're absolutely right.
That's some Harvard professor. All he does is threaten everybody, and every day he's held up as some role model. No, he's not my kind of candidate, by the way, and I mean a candidate for academic distinction.
Right.
Listen, my friend, we are living through very, very strange times, and all I can offer you is what I have written with One From the Heart, Abuse of Power, my thriller. I'm going to send it out to you right now because I hear that the first printing is almost gone. And I really am telling you, if you're going to buy one for the holidays, you're waiting. I know money is tight. You should do it in the next couple of days, I would think. I don't know if they're going to get a second printing out in time. And you're going to want to have the first printing. Because the first printing of Abuse of Power, just think about what that's going to be worth on eBay in the third millennium. Just think about what it's going to be worth in the year 3000. if the paper and the ink are still standing. I'm feeling a little giddy today, and I tell you why. I'm following up with, can't go into it in total detail. My agent called me, and he said, they're so in love with you, the publishers are so in love with you, they're begging me to send anything that you have for your next book. So I got to tell you something. I know I'm prolific. I know I've been writing all of my life. I went into another storage bin just yesterday, and I found 10 new novellas that I had written during my lean years when I was still trying to be discovered, long before radio, while I was struggling as a corporate consultant and as a nutrition writer, I was writing amazing things. I couldn't believe it. I can't believe it. I guess I have to tell you how excited I am to find my own work. And so instead of writing something new, I'm going to tell my agent, look, I want to write, I really want to publish the unpublished works of Michael Savage in one volume. They're astounding. Some of them are amazing. I can't. Should I read you the titles? I know many of you would like to hear it. But I'm afraid if I do, someone will steal the titles. Because I'm a genius at titles, and I can't just give them away. I can't give them away on the show. I'd love to. I'm not trying to bait you. I just can't do it. If I read some of these titles, you wouldn't believe how good they are. Look at this. I can't wait to read them myself. What is this? Oh, no. Come on. This is so timely. It's frightening. Wait a minute now. What is this one? Hold on now. I can't get... Wait. Oh, no! Come on! I'm going to read you a line, I swear to God. This is called The Molester, or Innocence the Aphrodisia. This book, this small story or novella was written, I don't even know the year, I can't find the year, but I'm going to read you a line, and then I've got to stop because I'm shocked by what I have here. Are you ready for this? It's about a football player who turns out to be a molester. Or is it about a coach who turns out to be a molester of boys? Yes, and it's a sergeant who's on his trail. How did I write that so many years ago? I don't know. I don't know what it has to do with anything else, but I just can't believe this. Because it's so timely, it's shocking. It's written in the words of a chief inspector who says, I first came into this case when the chief inspector called me to piece together this battered body of that boy you read about, Joey Adams. They found him in pieces, his skull a jigsaw only the demented bastard who took him apart could figure out. It was a sexual abuser who took him. Not your money-sick kidnapper, but the truly sick. The pathologues you pass every day, in the bank, at the supermarket, at the office. The crazy sons of bees who pass for normal are usually the worst mutilators. At least that's been my observation here at the morgue in the lower basement of Buena Vista Hospital. Sergeant, Thursday in the morning, the sergeant bellowed down the stairs, "Hal, they've just found another one." Well, there it is. And he's a forensic anthropologist, this cop. The muscles tensed in his jaws and neck, the old footballer getting ready to squash the other player, probably from Stanford. Johnson stamping the good old dirt of Berkeley like a native black bull, which he was. See, it's very good stuff. Written maybe 25 years ago. I have so many unpublished, rejected manuscripts that are exciting to me right now for a number of reasons. Because all of the editors whose rejection letters I have attached to the manuscripts are dead or gone, and I'm still here, I swear to you. All of the editors who rejected me 20 years ago, no one knows them, and they're all dead. And now the people who've taken their jobs are clamoring for my work. I want to live another 20 years. I've got to see this. I've got to see it come out. I'll be right back. I got to stop.
Savage.
All of these political topics we've been talking about, and how I have now skipped a beat and fallen into my old stories. Pictures are falling out from 20, 25 years ago that have something to do with politics, and I have to bring one of them up now. I must tell you, I just brought a lot of them into the studio, and we'll get back to the politics as usual in a minute. Here is a statue, a sculpture that I've carried in my mental faculties, in my mental valise my whole life. I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's still there. It's white marble, and it's by Carpeaux, who was a French artist, 1827 to 1875, and he did this thing called Uglione and His Sons. What is it? It's from the Divine Comedy. And it shows a former count who made one mistake, Uglione della Gherardexa. I don't know if that's exactly right. But it shows his sons and his grandsons all naked and dying of starvation because of something he did to insult the count in his time. He was, remember, a high-flying aristocrat. And then he did something to fall out of favor with the power structure. And this sculpting shows him gnawing at his own cheek, very gaunt, very thin, sitting nakedly on a stool. His son is holding onto his legs, looking up at his eyes. His grandson is begging him for some food. And they're all chained. Uglione and His Sons. If you're in New York City, if it's still there, it's astounding. So why did it strike me at the time? And what does it have to do with today's politics? Well, take a look at what just happened to Coach Paterno. The man has lost everything overnight. And it goes back to a religious precept that I shared with you on this show many years ago, where the ancient Jewish scribes wrote, one of them wrote, that a man could spend his entire life building up his reputation and with one mistake lose it all overnight. What happened to Paterno is an example of what could happen to any of us at any moment. Nothing is assured. I don't care how rock solid your life is yesterday. We don't know what it's going to be tomorrow, right? Now, what is true for the individual is also true for the nation. And you know where I'm going to go with this. How one leader can make a nation or one leader can destroy a nation. How one leader can save a platoon under fire in combat, and one leader can run from the fire and the whole platoon can be wiped out. How an officer in the most horrible districts of the worst city in America, in the narcotics division, can have a partner that's rock solid that'll be his back, and they can get through a firefight, or you can get somebody put in there for political reasons who'll turn her back or his back and leave you stranded and you wind up with a bullet in your face. So as I say to you, there's politics in a flea. But for me, Uglione and His Sons is symbolic of what could happen to a man or a nation. An incredible piece of art. But this is what's so great about great art. Great art can be universal in almost any story. You can be entered into any story. I guess what I just said to you can be put into my next novel. Jack Hatfield's next adventures are being written as we speak. Because of the making of many books, there is no end. And life is finite. We have a short dance in the sun, and it's over. And each night it becomes more apparent to me that the dance is coming to an end. When, we don't know. Does anyone listening to the show know? Does anyone listening to this show know when their end will be? Do you know? I don't know. So here we are again. I mean, there's a lot of this doom and gloom hanging over the horizon. Personally and socially and economically and nationally. It's as though America is being taken apart by the day. I listen to these debates in part. I don't really listen to them in their totality. And I'm left limp because the moderators are all liberal moderators. They're all put up there by General Electric or CNN or one of the other front organizations for the government media complex, the New World Order, if you want to put it in that context. They never ask the real questions. Like a real question would be, what would you do to stop the flood of illegal immigrants in America? How would you make certain that only citizens vote in the next election? I mean, to me, that would be the first question. You got to ask yourself, why is it that the Democrats refuse to permit any state that passes a voter ID law to actually enact it? Because the Democrat Party is not a party of the American people. It's a party of the foreigner, the illegal foreigner at that. It's a party of the special interest, et cetera. Let's go down the line. The Democrats could never survive. You listen to me carefully. You listen to me carefully. If we had true voter ID in this country between now and 2012, Obama would lose by 30 points because the real American would never vote for him again after seeing what he did to this country. Never. And so therefore they fight any state that tries to impose their own sovereignty upon their own affairs. They attack one estate after another that tries to pass voter ID. They come up with all cockamamie lawyer stuff that it will deter people from the polls. Of course it will deter people from the polls. Those who aren't citizens will be deterred from the polls, as they should be. They should not only be deterred, they should be deported. So if what I'm saying to you is this, if the Democrats ever had to face the average American working class voter, they would lose by a landslide, the greatest loss in history. Why? Because the Republicans are so great? No, but because the Democrats are so bad. That's why. So to put it in the context of the only two parties we really have, irrespective of the fact that I'd like to see a real third party, which I will not see in my lifetime, this is the truth and the reality of it all, in my opinion. The Democrats, in other words, rely upon the illegal alien voter to swing the votes in the states that they know they could never win otherwise. Arizona, let's go to the callers. Arizona, Brad, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I've been listening to you on and off for about 3 years, and I find myself easily accepting the things that you talk about, but then sometimes I find myself just screaming at the radio that I don't understand what you're saying or I don't agree with it. Earlier you made a comment about police officers, and I myself, I'm a police officer, been so for about 4 years. You made some comments about how they themselves are much like the people they arrest, but they just control themselves.
Well, hold it. No. I didn't say that. What I said was they have to have the same degree of violence within themselves in order to face the truly violent. In other words, to take down a truly violent ex-con, you can't be Mr. Rogers or Mr. Peepers as a cop, can you?
No, not at all.
No, you have to be just as tough and just as mean is what I'm saying. But you are the Irish wolfhound as opposed to the wolf.
Gotcha. Okay.
You see? In other words, that was a compliment. I'm saying the real cop has to be courageous and tough to protect we the sheep.
Okay. All right. I agree with that. One thing I was thinking about, though, is I have arrested several child molesters. And during the investigation and the issues that I've come across through that time, I have felt myself being so angry to the point that I wanted to take justice in my own hands.
Oh, so you agree with me. I said, I don't know how anybody could be a cop. You arrest a child molester like this, what's going on, you'd want to kill him. You'd want to take him in a back room and break every bone in his body.
Exactly. And even cop killers. We had a cop killed in my area a couple years ago. And we caught the guy. It wasn't me, but my partners had to have some sergeants and lieutenants ride in the elevator with the guy just to make sure everything went okay.
I'm going to show you a story that is probably one of the greatest travesties of justice in your lifetime, and it's going on right now. I want you to go to michaelsavage.com, and Liz, a story that you must, before it's dropped, there's a Border Patrol agent who arrested a marijuana smuggler, a known smuggler. He had been arrested several times. This Border Patrol agent, who was a Hispanic, by the way, arrested this dope smuggler who fought with him, and he pinned the guy's arms behind his back. Okay, the Border Patrol agent. They took the Border Patrol agent to jail, to a court, and he lost the battle. They said that he brutalized the marijuana smuggler. Listen to me. The Border Patrol's agent is Jesus E. Diaz Jr. The Justice Department destroyed this man. And now the Justice Department, under this Eric Holder, is suing the family of the Border Patrol agent who they jailed for a fine that they levied upon him, even though the judge said that there would be a grace period. They're trying to destroy the family. Now, yeah, I ask you what kind of country are we living in when Eric Holder takes the side of a drug smuggler over a border agent, and the border agent is thrown in jail, and then the Justice Department goes after the family of the jailed Border Patrol agent. Wait, and the dope smuggler is released.
Yeah.
This is the world you want to live in? I don't want to live in this country. I don't want to live in a country where we have criminals in the Justice Department who would do this to a Border Patrol agent with impunity. How could they get away with this?
What's really horrible, Michael, is we have literally seconds to make that decision on what we're going to do. And if we make the wrong decision, we could get killed. And
so that's what I'm trying to tell you. The Border Patrol agent, Jesus E. Diaz Jr., was arresting a dope smuggler on the border. The dope smuggler put up a fight. He put his foot on the guy and he pinned his arms behind him, as you would have to do to control a violent young punk. And they found a DA, I think, in Texas to go after the Border Patrol agent. They put him in jail and they released the dope smuggler. And now Eric Holder is suing the family, trying to collect a $6,800 fine from his wife. Now, I ask you, which side is this government on? You know which side they're on. They're on the side of the illegal alien, the dope smuggler, you name it. They are not on the side of the American people. And I don't know how any cop listening to the show could ever vote for this guy again. I don't understand it. This is a completely out of control government that has turned on the police, turned on the people, turned on the government itself, turned on the government. This administration, this regime has turned on its own governmental agencies. If they're arresting a Border Patrol agent who did his job against a dope smuggler, which side is this government on? Tell me. I'll be back.
Savage.